All right, what we're doing today is to go over the beginning discussion on the topic of benefits. Benefits being the other half of the compensation equation that we talked about in the beginning. You know, that you have cash that passes your hand, be it in the form of a naturally occurring salary that you get through the wage and salary survey to the salary structure of your organization, or it can be that pay for performance consideration or an hourly rate. That doesn't need to be explained too much, except that before I go on, one more thing I wanted to just cross my mind here when we're talking about hourly rates. Remember now, hourly rate is the kind of thing where employees get paid per hour up until we get to what?
40 hours,
right? And at 40 hours, we enter into overtime pay under the Fair Labor Standards Act, under the Fair Labor Standards Act. And at that point, under the Fair Labor Standards Act, employees who are not supervisors and who are not out of range of management, like traveling salespeople, those kinds of things, will get the time plus one half added to their pay. So if they were getting $20 an hour, they'll get $30 an hour for the hours worked after 40 hours. The Fair Labor Standards Act sort of an omnibus of pay details. And this overtime provision, of course, is an important consideration. People who are covered are considered to be non-exempt. And that's the phrase now. They're non-exempt from the provision of the Fair Labor Standards Act. That means they get time and a half check, right? They get time and a half. But if they're exempt, because their management or because they're out of control of the organization, of traveling or whatever all the time, then they are not covered by the 40-hour rule. And, of course, this inspires companies to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars annually on legal fees trying to take all their non-exempt employees and somehow convince the government that they're all exempt and we shouldn't have to pay overtime. This is very common, as you would expect. As soon as something like this happens, where employees are going to get time and a half, the companies are going to start trying to change their job titles, change their job descriptions, change their duties, whatever it might happen to be, so that we can somehow cram them into the concept of exempt and not have to pay overtime. Quite common. So just be prepared for your company to, as usual, screw people over. This is not rare. So this Fair Labor Standards Act, Fair Labor Standards Act, is the document that covers this. This also covers things like child labor laws, how old children have to be to work, safety aspects of the kind of work that kids can do, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't cover things like family farms and those kinds of things. But in general, businesses are not allowed to use kids that are under 16 in particularly dangerous types of jobs, et cetera, including box crushers and using those knives and whatnot. Okay. Now let's get on to benefits. I got that out of my hair. So, benefit considerations. And as I explained to you before, we're running two different types of benefits. These are the required over here, and these are voluntary. In general, it's worth noting that by and large, benefits amount to about 40% of, and this is just rough, guys, so you kids are going to memorize this, expecting it to be somewhere on a test, but it's just a general rule of thumb that companies spend 40% on benefits, and then the balance of 60 cents pay to make up the compensation dollar, right? So a total compensation dollars fit 60-40 benefits and pay. So benefits, as you can see, are quite expensive. Now, in order to achieve our strategic strategy here, it's our goal, right? In order to make use of pay strategically, one of the things, which includes benefits, one of the things that you would want to be sure to do as you pay employees a salary and a benefit is to make sure that they understand the value of provided benefits. If you were to survey employees now, survey them, and ask them the value of their benefits, you know, what the company has to pay for these, which we now know is 40 cents on the dollar, the average employee is going to say roughly in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 cents. So they don't know the value of the benefits. Now, from the point of, yeah.
Sorry, this is going back to the overtime discussion. Don't you think that the overtime law is more harmful than good? Because I've never worked a job where they let me go into overtime. But there's been times in my life where I would have liked to work, you know, 60 hours because I had bills to pay and whatnot. So, but no job will ever let you work more than 40 hours because then they have to pay you overtime. So then you have to get a 40-hour job and, like, you know, another 15, 20 hours somewhere else. So I guess, like...
So what you're saying is because the company's screwing you over, you're willing to screw yourself over and work for half or two-thirds of what you should be getting.
But some people need to work more than 40 hours, but no job will let them because then they have to pay them overtime.
I wouldn't say no job, though, because I worked a job where I was working 70-hour weeks, and it
worked. Yeah, it's not no job, but I think a lot of jobs, you know, they don't want to pay you that.
Some of them do,
yeah.
There's no question about that, and that's something which, well, you know they're going to be what they're going to be squeezing pay constantly, so it's probably not a particularly high-paid job because they're trying to keep costs down so squished low, and they don't care if you leave. So what does that say about you as working for them? Yeah, you don't have that much value. They don't care. So they're cutting you shy because they don't care if you just quit. They'll replace you with somebody else. Do you understand? They also lie like a rug. I had a student came in here, was working car detailing at one of the agencies here, which has since folded, by the way. So we got talking, and it turned out that he was working, well, close to 15 hours overtime per week detailing cars for these people, and they were just counting it as straight hours. So I said, go talk to them, see what they say. So first he called down to state labor. State labor explained the whole situation, which is what I told them already. And he went in and talked to them. He said, well, we know, and we'll go ahead and pay you overtime for the missed 3 weeks or 2 months or however long you've been doing this. Just don't tell anyone else. Which, of course, he did. He went up and told everyone else. Because if we have a situation here where companies will, you know, one way or the other, are going to try and cheat you, in my opinion. That's the place that you want to leave and go to where they're going to treat you fairly. So all I can say is, yes, there are companies that do that. There are also companies that pay no attention to safety regulations. You've been following all this about the mines over in West Virginia. Hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of federal fines because of not safety. Do they do anything? Nope. Why? Because there's no government agency to collect it. They don't have the money to send the people out into the field to enforce the safety regulations. My point is that there are lousy companies that are hard on employees everywhere. And one of the reasons you're here in school is so that you can get better jobs with organizations that do care about their employees. Do you see my point? But at the point where you're just sort of working, schlepping along, yeah, it's not a surprise to me. But that doesn't mean they don't, that they wouldn't owe it to you. They would owe it to you if they if you worked. My advice is get a better job. That's all I can say. There's always going to be companies that violate overtime considerations, safety considerations, other benefit considerations. Tax withholding, there's a real beauty. They withhold it from your tax. They withhold a certain amount of pay from your for Social Security, for example, or for tax withholdings. That they then are going to put in for you in your name, and then they just keep all the money. They keep the Social Security, keep the tax withholding, and after a couple of years, they've got a couple million dollars of leftover money. They bag it all up in a box, send it to Switzerland, and move to Mexico.
How would you go about finding out about...
Call the IRS and find out if your Social Security is being paid, if the with tax withholding is being paid correctly, blah, blah, blah. As long as you're willing, as long as you're not doing anything, you're essentially saying, take advantage of me. I'm just too lazy to find out. You have to do this. Is it a surprise to you that there are employers out there that are willing to rip you off? It should not be a surprise to you. It's just common. There's just remember, here's one phrase, another tattoo you can put on your arm. There's no bottom to the pit of greed. And you'll find that to be true after all these years, I can tell you. Yeah?
He had a question.
Oh, yeah?
if you're getting paid salary and you're working over 40 hours a week, do you get any type of compensation?
On a salary, typically you won't. Quite often, salary will be a management position anyway. Hourly positions, yes, but in general, salary, no. So what companies, that's what I was saying, companies are going to try and put everybody on a salary, especially if they're regularly paying paying 20 hours worth of overtime. They say, bag this, we're going to make everybody a salaried employee. But there's fairly tight controls on to what is a salaried person, which isn't a salaried person. So that, when examined by anybody that knows what it's talking about, will realize that this is just a ginned up situation to screw over the employees and the IRS. So it's unbelievable. Contracting is another one. I'm going to have 30 employees, and I'm going to have them on contract basis. Contract basis, that means I don't have to pay anything. Just pay them whatever we agree on, right? And we don't have to pay overtime, no Social Security, no nothing. I'll just make them contractors, independent contractors. So I'm going to have this house built, and I'm going to hire a bunch of independent contractors. And there's about 20 points that determine whether or not a person is an independent contractor, and 99.9% of the time, they're not. They're controlled by the homeowner or the business owner. And so once again, they're trying to get over something. And yet, of course, at the same time, they want their own children to go to the very best schools paid for by tax money, which they're not paying. So, anyway, back to the point here. So what we have here, then, is this idea of using benefits as well as pay. We've already talked about whether or not you're using a low-cost approach to your product or whether you're using differentiation. But here, in terms of our benefits, we can structure our benefits to be a strategic component of our pay system. How do we do that? Well, we use particular benefits which will be useful to the people that we're getting. So in general, if you find that you're hiring a whole bunch of high-tech people, you might be finding that you're hiring younger people in their 20s and 30s. Of course, you can't discriminate based on age. If you're hiring a bunch of younger people and you want to get them and have them stay with you, what kind of benefits can you offer? Well, mortgage benefits, right? Those kinds of things that help attract a person. If you have your mortgages supplied to you by the company at a particularly low rate, that's going to be attractive. Or whatever will be attractive to young people. California, when they were during the tech hiring boom, they were giving out leases on BMW convertibles to their new hires.
You said we can structure our benefits to be a strategic part of
our compensation process, or just it's part of our strategy. So we're shaping our benefits to fit the people that we're hiring. Most people don't realize. Okay, so knowing that then, we can do some with required benefits, which I'll talk to you about, and then the bulk of that shaping of our voluntary benefits to our workforce is going to be pretty important. We should be shaping. All right, let's talk about required for a minute. What are the required benefits? If I were to quick ask you, and then list them if I can't get an answer right away. What is it?
Social Security.
Good. That's it? No, we got three more.
Healthcare
now. Now we have the Affordable Care Act, which is... in large part, just being outsourced by a lot of companies. Go ahead, next.
Workers' compensation.
Workers' comp. And?
Unemployment
insurance. FMLA. Family and Medical Leave Act. Okay, so these are the required benefits. I'm going to talk to you about each one. Because they are an important cost to a company. I'm still waiting to see how the Affordable Care Act pans out, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Social Security. Well, as you know, with Social Security, you are contributing, I'm pretty sure it's 7.65% plus 7.65% by your employer. And this is by you. And in here is also including Medicare. Now, I'm not sure how the interface with Medicare and the Affordable Health Care Act interacts, but somehow it does. But for the time being, just talking about the topic in general, this is being extracted from your paycheck in this 7.65 is the net of your paycheck after various deductions, which we'll talk about here in a minute. After various deductions, 7.65%. I strongly encourage you. What do you got? You
good?
Huh?
I couldn't read that.
What? What a surprise. Where are we? Here?
No, not a paycheck after, I think.
Net. Yeah. Net.
After.
Right.
Okay.
After stuff's pulled out. Okay. In terms of this, recognize that Social Security, which appears to be a burden at your young age of 7.65 being pulled out of your paycheck on an ongoing basis, seems to be quite an imposition. At least it always annoyed me. But now that I'm retiring and about to start collecting $3,200 a month from Social Security, and Jody will get $1,100, you get $4,300 a month off of Social Security. And she's going to live to be infinite. So somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 95. If with any luck, I'll make it till next year. And so, in the end, it's a hell of a lot of money you get back with this. So my opinion is, even though you could might be able to do better investing the 7.65 yourself, maybe. We have an investment now that's giving us 8% long term. Maybe it would come out ahead. But this is pretty solid. And it's like an enforced retirement plan, which supposedly was never supposed to generate enough money for you to live on, but sure as heck does. I mean, we don't have to live on this, but it's good to get it.
So is the amount that you get in the future proportionate to the amount that you put in from your paycheck?
It's proportionate to the amount that you've earned and from which they're taking money out. So if you were working a minimum wage job all these years, you wouldn't get that kind of money. But we were working, you know, I was working a pretty good job, this one, right? And Jody was at the bookstore, and between the two of us, it came up pretty well for that. But my point is then that make sure that you're always putting money into Social Security, even if you're taking a job for, you know, 2 months. Yeah.
So I make a lot of my money through odd jobs, which doesn't get taxed.
No, it certainly does not.
Well, I mean, I get personal paychecks.
Right, and you don't get taxed, right? It's just somebody hands you a wad of money.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they get taxed on their money. But say that I made most of my money that year off of these untaxed paychecks, and the IRS looked at my bank account and saw, like, my legally taxed job didn't give me that kind of money. Would they contact me and ask for, like, a chunk of it?
they would use what to support their contention that you earned this money? You'd be taken driving up to Washington to the IRS and saying, I meant to tell you that last year I earned $12,000 repairing people's destroyed decks and broken windows.
Obviously, I wouldn't tell them.
All right, so then how are they going to know about it? No, it ain't going to happen. And I think that every one of us in this room is going to breathe a sigh of relief to know that that's not true, right? As far as I know, they're not going to come back. Now, when Jody and I applied, you know, I've been here for 27 years or whatever, so it's a long record of paychecks. And she said, well, it looks like before that you had sporadic paychecks, right? And I said, yeah, very sporadic. But the reality was I was probably, I can't even remember it's that far back, probably building things for people, most likely. That's all I did in my youth.
Say I did a huge job and got one paycheck of $100,000. Do you think that substantial amount would make them come and try to get some of it?
I don't think...
If they...
That's right. If see, what the person that's paying you is going to say is that I spent this money on whatever, fixing up my business or fixing up my house or whatever, so I want a tax deduction on it. And they're going to say, that's great. What'd you do with the money? Well, we gave it to some guy that was a student. And they're going to say, well, what's his Social Security number? And they're going to say, they have one of two choices. I don't know, which is not a good thing to say because they've been paying off the books, or here it is, which is a bad thing for you. So if you go to the point where you're really getting a substantial chunk of money, I'd advise... In fact, I really would advise all along to do it legitimately. The reason I'm saying that is because it builds up a Social Security record. For example, the young lady who's nannying my granddaughter. Have I told you about my granddaughter? Okay. Well, she has a nanny now. This was the shock. This was the traumatic event in all of our lives that this young woman was going to come and look after Frankie when we weren't around. This is horrifying to me, right, that somebody is going to hold our granddaughter, and who knows what. For a while, she was dressing her in frilly skirts and crap. God, she looked horrible. We got the Carhartts out. This is what the kid wears. And stop with brushing her hair. Jesus. Every time, I could always tell it was a picture from her because Frankie's hair would be neatly brushed, you know, a little bow in it. No. Anyway, this young lady is right off the bat, so she's working maybe 30 hours for Rye, for our son, family. She said she wanted Social Security, she wanted tax withholding. She's smart. That's what should be done. Does it run up Ryland's cost? Yup. In fact, what she pays her is what he earns as a landscape architect. So, yeah, it's expensive. But it's good for her to have that done. Long term, it's going to really pay off for her. It shows an employment record. Yeah.
So, like I've heard that Social Security will be a tax to our generation. Is that just being wrong?
Will be what?
A tax.
A tax?
Yeah.
You mean a TAX or ATTACK? What?
TAX.
A tax to your generation? It's a tax to my generation. It was a tax to my grandfather. It was when my grandfather was convinced that these were communists. He's a communist. Roosevelt. That damn commie. You know, so we all think it's a tax. It is a tax. It's a Social Security tax.
Well, they were like implying that we would pay the tax without reaping the benefits. Because they're going to
run out of funds.
They're worried that the system will go bankrupt because every year they take the surplus and they keep putting it into other programs.
Yeah, like the federal deficit. And they refuse to really substantially raise the amount that you have to pay tax on. There's an upper limit on this, which is now at about $120,000 a year. Above that, you don't pay Social Security. What percentage of this nation earns over $120,000? Plenty of people. I believe that they should be taxed all the way up. So when Mitt Romney gets his somewhere around $10 million a year paycheck, right, it'll be Social Security taxed all the way up. 7.65% on Mitt's. He'd be self-employed, so he'd pay 15%. I'm all for it, but then again, I'm a pinko at heart. So what we have here is this idea of underfunding. That's why there's been such a problem. They're just underfunding. Why is it underfunded, Dr. Fox? We don't understand. Because they're threatening to take more money away from the wealthy. The wealthy say, shit, I'm not putting that money into Social Security. I'll just take it and pay it to my congressman to make sure he votes the other way. So what happens? The congressman says, oh, no, we shouldn't raise it, right? And everybody's happy except for the people who are underfunding their Social Security.
It's not underfunded. It's that they're taking the surplus money out of the Social Security.
That's true, too.
Money into other
yeah,
things.
Paying it into where the deficits are because there's no tax money
the
there because the wealthy have said, I'm buying my congressman off. That's all the way it is. I mean, that's what happens.
So it's a wealth gap issue, too, pretty much. Like,
well,
yeah,
the rich
get
richer.
Here, GM, have some money.
Take all the money.
Don't
right.
Worry about paying it back.
Right. Don't worry about policing our mines and collecting the millions and millions of dollars that are out on unsafe coal mines. Right. Just let all these people get squashed along with their canary down there. What's the damn deal? Hey, it's a wealthocracy. What can you say? You got a choice. Live with it or become one of the wealthy. Whatever works for you. Whatever floats your boat. In any case, you know, my advice is long-term strategy, pay, get on Social Security and start paying it, right? Have tax withheld, just be legitimate so that you can rack up as large a Social Security payment when you retire as possible. It'll be, the age will be raised by the time you get there until 71 or 2. It was only supposed to last for 3 years initially back in 1936 when it was passed. It was only supposed to be for 3 years. You retired, you lived on Social Security for 3 years, and then you died, right? That was the agenda, right? Well, the agenda has been certainly changed. And now we live forever, basically. Pretty good deal, as long as they keep sending me my $4,200 a month. Jesus.
Without a talk, you said you're self-employed, that you get...
That's like $50,000 a year. What a deal. What?
You have to pay 15% to Social Security.
If you're self-employed, which
seven,
I did. I was a carpenter for years.
7.65 times 2 is 15.3.
Huh?
Would it be 15.3? Would it be chicken?
I think it's whatever it comes out to.
Okay.
Get a calculator. Whatever it takes, yeah. It's that number, that big number. So I had to pay that for myself during that time.
Of
course, it's the cost of doing business. All right, so Social Security then supplies us with retirement. And as part of the strategy, what would you suggest that the company do to lower their costs? I already gave you the key word. The key word was net. Gross is what the person gets paid, gross. Net is after things are being subtracted out, and the company pays, as well as the employee pays, Social Security on that. Strategically, what should you do then? Encourage employees to? No. That's my idea, too. We have gross. A bunch of negatives here. We have the net. And the net is what's hit for the 7.65. So, what should we do?
Contribute to their 401k.
Everything you can possibly get employees to spend money on here, pre-tax, is going to help the company save money against a shrinking net. So, you get them to put money into 401s, right? Which we'll have to talk about here in a while, their accumulation voluntary, into things like prepaid legal fees, all kinds of stuff. Whatever you can get in this ballpark that you can get employees to buy ahead of time means that their net pay is lower because it's pre-tax, net pay is lower, and your payment to Social Security is concomitantly less. So that's a good thing. Everybody see that from a strategic point of view?
So the net was the pre-tax.
The net is now what you're going to be taxed on. This is pre-tax. From here down to here is pre-tax. Then the remainder is taxed. So you want them to subtract out as much stuff as they can. I mean, it really adds up. The first year that ASU did this and pushed this big time, they say $50,000. And then it's going up since then, obviously, as it started to steamroll and we started to contribute more. All right, so good. Social Security, then, I believe, is going to be here forever. I think that they'll make some more changes to it when you retire. the maximum amount that you have to pay Social Security on. It sort of inches up a little bit every year, but then it's capped at 125 or whatever it is. But it needs to be allowed to move more freely. So I think these things will be taken care of. It's the third rail of the political campaign, is you just can't conceive of touching that third rail during a campaign and suggest that any kind of change to Social Security will be made, because so many people rely on this money, right? It's not just nice, like for Jody and I say, boy, that's nice. No, many people live on this money. It's required for them. And so if you're campaigning to cut Social Security, you're fighting a losing battle. So what politicians won't talk about. But it will be raised for you guys in terms of your age. It also covers survivor benefits. You know, if you have dependents that are still underage and you die, or your spouse can continue along to collect the amount that you had, or whatever it might happen to be. So they're attached benefits that go out on Social Security too, which are helpful for the individual families, for sure. So I don't see it as a bad thing. Naturally, my grandfather thought it yet another communist plot. The ACA, the Affordable Health Care Act, disparagingly known as Obamacare, is the idea that essentially everybody is going to have health care. This is a radically wild idea here in the U.S. Do they have this other places in the world? Yes. Every other place in the world except us, and maybe Zimbabwe or someplace. For why are we so backwards? Who knows? I can't explain it. In France, it's really great. In France, let's say, going to have a baby. You say, you know, I really can't keep my house up. I'm going to have a baby. They send someone around to your house to take care of keeping your house clean, do the dishes, prepare the meals. Yeah. Au revoir. Au revoir. She's setting sail now, as a matter of fact. Right? So they have incredible coverage in almost every other country. We were on a bicycle ride. Jody and I were on a bike, organized bike ride, for which I was sagging. She was riding as usual, driving a car, picking people up. This guy comes down this hill where there was warning signs. We put warning signs up. Goes in the corner, hits the gravel, flies off his bicycle, does all kinds of apparent damage to himself. This is in Canada. They send an ambulance, they pick him up, they take him to the hospital, they set the wrist that he's broken, fix the contusions on his arm, supply him with a month's supply of painkillers. And since he was from the United States, there was a bill. Are you ready for how much the bill was? $475. That's those damn commies again. Socialized medicine, terrible. Right? $475. What would that have been here? 8,000 maybe, 10,000, something like that. So there are advantages to this situation. Here, of course, it's not going to be anywhere near that generous, thanks to some people, right? It's not going to be that generous, and it's totally confusing, but this is at least supplying some health care to people. Don't get in an argument with me about it. I know you're flaming teabaggers, but please, don't get in an argument with me about it. All right, so we have this coverage here. It's better than nothing, but it's controversial. How this works is many companies are saying, oh, we can't deal with it. It's way too complicated. Just go ahead. Here's $75 to go buy your own health care. They just give them the money to go out and buy the health care. Whole thing is so absurd. Okay, but it does exist. It's an expense the companies are going to have to deal with. I understand that. But somehow they managed to be able to do this and remain competitively globally, except in China, of course. And it's okay. Though they do have, do they have insurance for workers in China?
Yeah.
Is it good?
Mm-hmm.
Is it?
Yeah.
You're sure?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They have really good insurance in China, I'm sure. All right, but we don't. We have it, but I couldn't say it was really good by any stretch. If they put single payer in, don't get me started. Okay, but we have it, and it's something for you to consider. Workers' compensation. Workers' compensation is a situation where an employee becomes injured because of the job. Something to do with the job has caused the person to be injured, and so they can't work, and so they're going to get workers' comp, right? It's reasonably straightforward when it's obvious. When it's something that's obvious, like a machine's broken and it hurts the employee, or there's a cable stretched on the floor and they fall, or in the case of my brother-in-law, who's now deceased, was on the job putting up air pipes in a building. This had nothing to do with his death, but he stepped backwards and tripped on a line and broke his hip or something, and so he was disabled for some period of time, and so he got workers' comp for that. It was an accident that happened on the job. The problem comes when people have, like, lung disease. Right? Can you say that the person got this lung disease, black lung or otherwise, on the job or not? And it gets to be contentious, and there's boards that hear these things and make a determination as to whether it was work-related or not. But it's extremely, as it gets to be more and more harder to determine, it gets quite complicated.
So what if it's just painfully obvious, like Agent Orange in Vietnam or the nuclear radiation testing from World War II?
They need to be covered, obviously.
Okay, so it has to be pretty much set in stone determined for it to count as workers' comp, but there can be no gray area.
There isn't a gray area. It's a yes or no.
Okay.
And, of course, the people that are paying would much rather pay attorneys to argue against you and let you go out and vomit your guts out in the field and die rather than pay what's necessary to pay people that are hurt by something that happened on the job or in Vietnam or wherever. I mean, if you're going to have to pay either the employee or pay lawyers to stop this from ever happening again, companies pay the lawyers and screw over the employees yet again. I'm in kind of a bad mood about this today. All right, so what we're looking at here then is a workers' comp situation which is highly contentious for many, many injuries. And as a budding career, you should think you could be a workers' comp investigator, which means that you drive around and see who's cheating on their workers' comp. Oh, I hurt my back on the job. I can't move for the next 3 weeks. I'll be bedridden. So they send somebody out and they see you surfing the waves at Waianea Bay, and they figure that you're cheating, right? And so they drag you in by your jams. So they drag you in, and you're with photographs of you surfing the break at Waianea Bay, right? And people don't believe that you're injured and that you were cheating, right? So you could be an investigator. Or the guys, I can't lift any weights anymore. I throw my back out, and the next thing you see, I'm lifting this potted plant up to hang on some hook on his porch or whatever. These are examples, but I'm not just making this crap up. All right, so yes, there's a possibility here of a future for you being an investigator, but the workers' comp situation here, by and large, companies realize that rather than run up these costs, because it's an insurance policy, and every time a company has a file against them for workers' comp, their insurance rates go up, right? Called experience points. It's because they've had an experience where a person's been hurt. The rates that they have to pay, the premiums that they have to pay, go up. It's like a car insurance. You smash your car up again and again and again and again and again, then your insurance rates go up. So workers' comp's the very same way. In order strategically then, if you were to tie this in, the way that you make this work for you is to make sure that you keep employees from being injured. Right? And as you keep employees from being injured, your premiums go down. Right? They get cheaper. And so the company saves money on that. It becomes a strategic tool. All right. Unemployment insurance. Unemployment insurance is a little bit different in each of the states, but in general, what we're looking at here is employees receiving a certain percentage of their pay when they're laid off through no fault of their own. Employees laid off through no fault of their own. That's right, right. Good. Write that down. Laid off through no fault of their own they can collect unemployment insurance. They get money from the unemployment insurance group, which is the money is accumulated at the state level. So what we're looking at here is to accumulate money at the state level. If the state does run out of money, then they go to the feds to refill the pool. On these long periods when their unemployment is high, they sometimes have to go for supplemental help to the federal government. But in general, it's the state. I can't answer it exactly because every state's different, and in some states, you can't file at all if it was your fault. But in other states, you can file if you wait for 2 months. Yes.
Oh, and answer to your question, I had a buddy who worked at the TGI Fridays that closed down. He was only there for about a month and a half before that closed down, and he was able to collect unemployment pretty much.
For how long? 6 months? It's supposed to be for 6 months.
Oh, for how long you have to work there first?
No, how long could he collect for?
Oh, I think he collected for 6 months, but he had to show that he was actually
looking for jobs unless you're a union member. If you're a union member, the union's supposed to be looking for you.
Yeah.
So the answer is apparently very short period of time in this state at least. Okay. So unemployment insurance then is the kind of thing that companies, if they use their brains, will realize that they'll save money by having a safer workplace. They won't have escalating work accidents increasing their premiums. So it's a value to have that done. But again, each state has its own particular regulations to how it's done. Family and Medical Leave Act. The Family and Medical Leave Act is a fairly new situation passed under Clinton, I think it was his first administration, that passed this idea that a company that has 50 or more employees must allow employees to take off up to 12 weeks a year for family-related medical issues. That's a big picture. Family-related medical issues. This is kind of loosely interpreted. It's not paid, by the way, but on the other hand, you can't lose anything as an employee. You don't lose seniority. You do get your job back, etc. And you're covered by benefits during that period. So you don't lose anything. You still get the benefits, you still have your seniority, et cetera, for that period of time, 12 weeks a year. It's a rolling 12 weeks. So during the course of this year, if you're about here, you've already taken 2 weeks off here, you still have 10 weeks available during this time, et cetera. But once the year's completed, you don't get to add it up again. It's still just another. It covers everybody in the organization except the very top management in a typical organization. And by and large, you're supposed to pre-announce to the company that you're going to make use of it. Then it gets to this situation where, should the first week of deer season be counted as sort of a psychological relief for people? And they should be able to take it because it'll make them feel better taking their son out hunting or their daughter out hunting, right? And it's a time for family bonding, and everybody will be much better off for it. I don't have an answer. But all this stuff's been done.
Why is top management not
doing it? I don't know the logic behind it. I'm just telling you that it is. You would think that it would be better if all of them were gone for 52 weeks a year, but that's just me. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Something about them really—they're so important that they can't be encouraged to take time off. Whatever. Sounds like a self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm so important. Okay. So these then are the general required benefits that the company has to shell out for. Is it expensive? Yes, it is expensive. There's no doubt. But it's part of the safety, the socially safety network that is supplied to American citizens. And most of you should realize by now that we may pay fairly well in this country, though that's disintegrating too. But in terms of benefits, we're not particularly progressive, to say the least, because other countries offer much better required benefits than being shown here, and a different outlook on it all too. But this is what we have here. All of these things in terms of keeping...
This only covers full-time employment, but it's a part-time position. That's why a lot of companies are trying to cut part-time.
Of course. So you work 39 and a half hours, right? And you're now a temporary employee running half-time.
So is there anything preventing you from doing that? Or is it just
There's nothing to prevent anybody from doing anything. When you're about to be vested in your benefits, we'll get to that in a little while, you've got in four and three-quarter years, and the amount of money that's been deposited by the company into your retirement, what happens? They fire you 3 days before you become your fifth year. Why? So they can keep all the money that they put in. It's common. So just be aware of these things. So all of this stuff here is something that is can be strategically advantaged to the company, because other companies may not be able to do it as efficiently. In other words, keeping accident rates low,
right?
That's an advantage to both the employee as well as to the company and their strategic position. Unemployment insurance,
right?
Make sure that you don't lay people off because of the problems the company might be having, because in that situation, unemployment insurance will be paid, which is why, to a large degree, companies fill in any questionable positions with temp employees.
In a situation like the factory workers in Detroit who worked in those auto factories, they obviously a lot of them got laid off, and I'm sure a lot of them do collect unemployment, but I was reading about how a lot of them were almost unemployable back in that industry because of advances in machines taking jobs, stuff like that. And so in a situation, let's say you're not part of a union, but you are,
all auto workers are unionized.
Oh, they are? Okay.
Well, yes. Tesla, but
yeah.
Yes.
If you go that 6 months and you still can't find work, does your unemployment just stop, or can you like?
It just stops unless they've declared that it's the economic times are so bad that everybody's going to get an extension. They don't just extend for one person.
Okay.
So yeah. So this, of course, means that employees are going to be. This is the one point of view, certainly not mine, are going to be encouraged to take any job. So you have somebody that's been, in some sort of reasonably important job, they can't get it replaced, 6 months run out, and they end up working at 7-Eleven, McDonald's, any of the service jobs where the various skills that they had developed over these years are going to be concentrated on making the absolute best French fries ever known to mankind. It's a complete waste of human capital, in my opinion. But that's the way that it works out. Okay. So these required benefits, then, are something that all companies have to take care of. It's expensive, but it can be a competitive advantage. Since it's required by laws, the companies have to supply them, right? And, of course, employees expect them to when they come in. Benefits came about, by the way, just for background history that you need to know about. Benefits came about because during the Second World War, back in the 1940s, there was a decree that since all the men were out fighting in the trenches, there was not enough people there to manufacture the various trucks and cannons and tanks and all what we needed. So companies would get a contract, and then they would try to get workers, and they would get workers by offering more money, which then ultimately drove the cost of the contract to the government up. Do you follow me? They needed workers to build tanks. They bid the tank at, let's say, $1 million per tank. and then they had a cost overrun because the labor was so expensive because there were 20 other organizations also building various military components. So the federal government said, no, you cannot offer higher wages to attract employees. So what did the companies do? Offered benefits. So that's when benefits got started, during the late 40s. And then unions picked up on them and said, hey, this is great for the employees. So once we're back to normal here, we're going to keep these benefits and argue to keep the benefits as well as to get more money for them. That was the 50s, when everybody bought a house, everybody had a reasonably new car, and things were pretty hunky-dory. Things have changed a good bit since then. What were you going to say, Jim? All right, so that's where we are. Next time we're here, we'll go on to voluntary benefits. And then next Thursday, the last day of class, I'll talk to you about dismissals. And we'll go over your grades, et cetera, et cetera. Did everybody sign this thing?